Blog Talk Radio.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, we are on the Blog Talk Radio Network. My name is Eric Payne. I'm usually known as the Sun also, if you ask somebody. We reached the on the network, Thompson Live, on Blog Talk Radio Network. You can reach us every Wednesday at 8 to 9 p.m. We're live then on the East Coast time. And also the show is archived. And you can listen to any episode you want at any time. BlogTalkRadio.com/KThompsonLive. Here is the namesake of the show, my mom, Kay Thompson.
Hey, Eric, how are you doing? You know what they don't, you know, when you say here on the East Coast, what was the easiest time in California where you used to live?
3 hours.
3 hours? Really? Really? Wow. You know, we are going to be talking about the Obama's farewell. You know, because of the fact that we have lost probably we have lost the best president ever. His term came up. He was president of the United States of America for 8 years, and what a job that he did. And I'm quite sure a lot of people were listening to and watching, the television to see exactly what was going on. So, what did you think about that, Eric?
I got a lot of thoughts about Barack Obama. I was fortunate enough to meet him last year.
Wow.
As a lot of my Facebook friends. I put a message up on the Facebook page, my Facebook page, Citizen Payne, for you guys to join us tonight and listen to the show. I met the president last year at the Congressional Black Caucus Annual Legislative Conference Dinner. The Congressional Black Caucus, if anybody was watching the hearings today, Cedric Richmond and John Lewis are members of the Congressional Black Caucus. They are the caucus for African American caucus that represents the interests of African American people in the country, and they represent the interests. The caucus represents the interests within Congress of the African American people, and they have a conference every year for people to come by and to talk about issues that affect our community. About 4-day-long conference in Washington, D.C., usually culminating with the evening, Saturday evening, black tie dinner, where for the last couple of years, President Obama has been the keynote speaker. A lot of times there'll be before that, Bill Clinton used to come by, and none of the Republican presidents come by. But that's where I met him. Very nice guy. Kind of make a brother feel like an underachiever because he's 1 year younger than I am. But he's very cool. And, got a lot of news, not just his farewell, which was really one of the most magnificent speeches that's going to go down in our history, as I think his presidency, but we also have, you follow that up with Donald Trump's new press conference, and it kind of tells you where the country is headed or where the country is going to sink to. Hopefully it won't, because all the rest of us are here. We will refuse to let it sink, but this incoming president is one that is combative. He is not one that's working to bring people together. Clearly, if you look at the press conference today, he is one that's vindictive. He's narcissistic, and he has some latent racial tendencies that we always talk about on the show. And there's also the hearings that went on for the confirmation of many of his cabinet members, which was quite surprising. The one we want to talk about that I alluded to earlier was the hearing for the Attorney General Jeff Sessions getting confirmed for that. And it made history today because Cory Booker, who was a senator from New Jersey, mm-hmm. the right great Cory Booker, I have more respect for Cory, newfound level of respect for him, because he did something that has been unprecedented in American history. He testified as a sitting senator mm-hmm. against one of his colleagues, and that's, I don't think it's ever been done, at least not in modern times, testifying against his nomination. Normally, colleagues will be on the committees and such, but voice their support or not. But Cory Booker went one step further today and testified against the nomination of Senator Jeff Sessions, as did John Lewis, as did Cedric Richmond, who is the chairman of the Congressional Black Caucus this year, a young man representative out of Louisiana, did an excellent job when he pointed out the fact that normally what's been protocol and courtesy. Let me just welcome Wayne real quick before I finish this point. Our other co-host, the legendary newsman, Mr. Wayne Gilman. Wayne, how are you today? You're on the air.
Hi, good evening, Eric, and carry on. I didn't get a chance to watch everything today, but what I've heard on the news is excellent news with respect to what the Democrats are doing, but continue.
Yeah, let me just finish this point, and I want to, of course, get your opinion, and Mom, we're going to all talk about it. But today, what happened was that normally what has been protocol is that when you have members of Congress, I'm talking about the senators and congresspeople are in totality, that's called the Congress of the United States, mm-hmm. just so everybody knows. It's broken down into the House of Representatives where you have congresspeople who are elected for two-year terms, the 435 members, and then it's broken down, and the other House of Congress is the Senate, which the 100 members who are elected to six-year terms. So what happens normally if you have a member of Congress, member of either of these bodies, testifying at a hearing, out of courtesy, it's been courtesy that they go first at the beginning of the hearing. And what this committee did today, and this is per Patrick Leahy co-signed on it, but Cedric Richmond brought it up, what they did today was make them go last at the end of the hearing. And they had these three, Cory Booker, John Lewis, and Cedric Richmond. Then they had three black individuals who were supporters of Jeff Sessions who have had personal relationships with him and stuff like that. Great, wonderful. Although I didn't particularly care for the youngest member, it seemed to be, because he seemed to be directing some of the statements in a rather derogatory way towards that side of the room where the other three Democrats were sitting. But Cedric Richmond brought up the point that said, you know, I wanted to take issue that we're basically being asked to get to the back of the bus. Here I am, a member of Congress, a sitting senator, and a civil rights legend, and we have been asked, we have not been given the courtesy, basically, of testifying first, which is protocol mm-hmm. in this situation. They made these members of Congress testify at the end of the hearing. And a little while later, Patrick Leahy was on MSNBC today. He's the dean of the Senate, meaning that he is the longest-serving senator now, and he said, yes, I've never seen that. And he's a member on that committee. He's a ranking member of the committee, although he's a Democrat, so the Democrats are in the minority, so the Republicans control what goes on. And he said he's never seen that. Normally it's courtesy that you let sitting members of Congress and senators go first. That's always been done as a courtesy. And he's been to thousands, in his own admission, and thousands of hearings, and that's never been done. So even on the level of Congress, in the halls of Congress, our representatives are being disrespected and have are experiencing racism. If you can believe that, and this just shows you the direction that we're going to go in with this president and with these Republicans. They have no respect. They honor nothing. They don't even honor the institutions that their very ancestors created as evidence of how they treated the first African-American president, first African-American who happened to be president. They didn't even respect the office of the presidency. And this is continuing. It's continued through those 8 years, and it continued on today. And it is ridiculous, and it's a travesty that these disgusting people would do that just to make points. He's going to get confirmed anyway, but why not let them make their point beforehand? But I guess they wanted to put them up with it because they couldn't put the other three guys, the three black guys who were pro Jeff Sessions, they couldn't let them go first. They had to let them go last because they're not sitting members of Congress. So clearly the Republicans wanted to have the three black members of Congress, the senator, the civil rights icon, and the chairman of the Congressional Black Caucus, have them sit there with three blacks who were pro Jeff Sessions. It is unbelievable where this country is going in the direction. These people are despicable. It's just a continuation of the disrespect that they've shown the first African-American president, and they continue to show black people. And it's evidenced, if you watch the press conference today, it's evidenced by the head of their party how disrespectful he has continued to be, how disrespectful he is to the people sitting in that press conference when he called CNN a fake news station. Never mind the fact that his head of the NSA, or Michael Flynn, is going to be was spreading, retweeting fake news stories when he retweeted that fake news story about Hillary Clinton being involved in some child sex ring when the guy went and shot up the pizza parlor last month. Never mind that they promoted that Donald Trump has lied on a regular, consistent basis. He has the nerve to call the first 24-hour news station fake news. And also being in bed with our arch rival. Anybody at 50 years or older, it's been drilled in our head that Russia was always supposed to be our enemy. But here is this guy, had the nerve to say, well, the hacking is bad, but the hacking produced, without the hacking, we wouldn't have been able to, and I'm paraphrasing now, without the hacking, we wouldn't have been able to find out about Hillary Clinton's emails. So even in that, he's verifying, co-signing that another government has hacked into has committed cyber espionage against his own country that he's getting ready to be president of. This is the craziest, and I would curse if I wasn't on my mom's show, but when I do my show, you might hear a couple of things going on, but I just wanted to get that out, Wayne, see what you guys thought. That is ridiculous.
Eric Kane, without trying to sound, without even using a pun here, and I don't mean this in any comedic, nature, but, you know, I feel your pain tonight, and I hope a lot of the millennials, because, you know, I've lived through some of this nonsense in the last 40 years, and I've witnessed some of Jim Crow when I was a child. But the deal is to see the blatant disrespect. When you juxtapose today's senatorial hearings compared to what you heard last night from Barack Obama in his farewell speech, it is freaking night and day that we're living in. And that's as far as I'll go, you know, with respect to what I've heard and witnessed. I feel your pain. I think this is just the beginning of what's going to happen over the next 4 years if this man should stay in office for 4 years. When I heard of the news conference today, was utterly embarrassing. It was so disrespectful, you know? And it just goes to show that braggadocious, you know, shoot from the hip attitude from Queens, you know, just flies across the White House room. I mean, wherever because I don't think it was conducted actually at the White House. I believe that was in New York, today's news conference. But regardless of what goes on, you know, it just saddens me to see the level of decadence our government has come down to. And whenever you get an opposing point, whenever you go to their side to get their point of view about what's going on, it's just the way that they, you know, they just run this line about the Democrats and what they see. You know, I go back to what happened this past weekend with Meryl Streep and the Golden Globe Awards. You know, the minute she came out with her comments, you know, and it was blatant. I mean, this has been memorialized. We've watched Donald Trump sit on TV and despicably came up with this caricature about this poor reporter from the New York Times, and not to say poor in that, you know, because of his disability, when he had to suffer all this time, and he's acting like as if he said nothing of that sort at all, you know? And then when you get his people to come back and to comment on regular network TV about what was said by Streep, you know, they just follow the party line. It's like the agenda is already written, and it just defies logic. It really defies logic. And this whole fake news business is something that we really have to be careful of. I'm just hoping that people are watching what's going on and paying attention and are prepared to protest like never before.
I wonder if that's actually going to happen. I don't think so. I hope so, but I really don't have any faith in people, you know, they're speaking out to express themselves. But really, I have to learn, Eric, I'm glad you set me up the tone and the scene for what happens in Washington, because a lot of people really don't know and don't understand that whole process. So, we got a little bit of that, and I know you're going to be bringing it back to that. But also, who impressed me was Cory Booker. Cory Booker. I'm telling you, Cory ran for, he was mayor of Newark for a while, came into Newark, you know, and people didn't like him initially, but he gradually, you know, got most people behind because of the fact that he was so intelligent and because of the fact that he was really in fighting for Newark, New Jersey. So we want to say congratulations again to Cory Booker because he really set the tone for that whole thing. Also, you know, now Trump says Russia has been hacking. No, pardon me. He said that it hasn't been hacking. No, pardon me. He said, what is going on? He's dealing with a nut. So, you know, I used to get very angry. But, you know, when I listen to him, I start laughing because it's like a comedy show. And it really would be very funnier if it wasn't so sad and so important, the job that he's in now, the position that he's in now. He's dangerous, okay? Fake news? Wow. We're going to be dealing, too, Eric, with Byron Saunders, who is going to be on with us tonight. He is also an arts management consultant, filmmaker, theater producer, and he's been on, a couple other radio stations with us. So I want to say, congratulations to Byron when we're able to get him up. Byron, hello.
Oh, okay. I'm here. Good evening. You all are hot tonight. I'm going to bring you. I've got a piece of history. I want you to take an acknowledgement and recognize something that the Attorney General nominee, Senator Sessions, came to the gallery with his granddaughter, who is Asian, in her lap, sitting in his lap, was the essence of Dr. Kenneth Clark's white baby doll test. Here he is trying to defend himself against racism and explicitly showing perceptually he doesn't understand the concept of how a minority in this country is denigrated as a result of him having his little Asian granddaughter sitting in his lap with a white doll baby. That says it all, folks. And that's history. See, I agree with Wayne and Eric and yourself, because historically we can go back to as far as the debates between Calhoun and Lincoln in the contest of getting a president in 1863. As it has been written, and you see it in the movie Lincoln, the context of that entire debate is the same debate that's still going on in 2017, which means historically we have not moved past that particular debate pre-Civil War, post-Civil War, Civil Rights Movement, 21st century.
And Byron, just recap. Recap the essence of that debate for people that might not be aware of it, if you will.
Byron?
Yes, sir. I'm right here.
Yeah, if you could recap the essence of that debate, if you will, just synthesize it real quick for people that might not be aware of it.
Okay, historically, what happened was the pre-Civil War, at the point at which the South at that time decided it was going to secede. And it seceded basically because they could not get their way in Congress to sustain their peculiar institution, which we know as now today as called slavery. And it's interesting to note that historically, the capitalist system at that time in 1863 was the industrialized North, which was beginning to create unions to protect their workers. And in the South, the agrarian South, cotton was held king. And without slavery and without indentured slave institutions, the economy of the South would have crashed. And it was at that point that the Congress and the Senate, as you may know, when historically looking at the Missouri Compromise, every state that came into the Union was either identified as a slave state or a free state. And it was based in that context, even Virginia, which happened to be one of the biggest land-owning states in the 13 colonies,
mm-hmm.
West Virginia separated from Virginia because it did not want to be identified as a slave state. And ultimately, when secession happened, this is when the war broke out. And, of course, even today, the South will never tell you and admit, including Mr. Sessions, already on record, identifying and noting that the Civil War wasn't about slavery. It was about its economy. It was about states' rights issue. And when you come back and move fast forward to 2017, the very same issue, states' rights, is still being played because, one, it's anti-union. States' rights, it's cheap labor. And states' rights is about holding on to the Confederacy agenda, which, as they say in the South will rise again. And this is exactly what they are intending to show you. And even with Texas last year, engaging in conversations about seceding from the Union. And, of course, what really makes that ironic, it was that it was Texas, as a result of the Emancipation Proclamation, and 2 years later, after the Emancipation Proclamation, on June 19th, which is why they celebrate Juneteenth, is that they finally, 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation, telling their slaves in that state that they had been freed 2 years prior.
Right. And so now,
right.
Like you said, now we get to 2017 and modern
yes.
day, where the states' rights,
yes.
where they have all of these ridiculous prisons and these ridiculous
yes.
prison sentences and prison labor.
That's right.
So that's the continuation,
that's right.
in still indentured slavery, but now they legal it because
right.
now it's legal because you have prisoners and inmates doing that work. And now, as a result, you have the prison, the school to prison pipeline, privatizing prisons. Prisons getting into businesses like making jeans, tilapia farming, and things like that, and putting legitimate businesses out of business because they don't have to pay their labor, i.e., indentured
exactly.
servant slavery again. Mom, you wanted to say?
Yes. Also, for those people who don't know about the Emancipation Proclamation, Byron, can you please spell it out? Because of the fact that
sure.
this is, you know, really important, involving this particular point in time. You know, with the job,
exactly.
without the job, with people talking about, what is this that we're talking about here, about, the hacking. And we have somebody who
yes.
is not qualified to be president. So how
exactly.
does the Emancipation Proclamation fit into all that as part of our history lesson that you're going to be presenting?
As part of the history lesson, for sure, Kay and Wayne and Eric, as you well know, the reasons why we go to watch night service, which is traditionally December 31st, is because at the day of 1st January 1863, when the Emancipation Proclamation was to go into effect, black people went to church, which is traditional, the sermon that every preacher knows in a Southern Baptist mentality, is preaching about the history of watch night service, which is about preparing for the day of freedom, the Emancipation mm-hmm. Proclamation. Now, moving fast forward, when we're talking about voting rights and ultimately what happened after that first Emancipation Proclamation, when Lincoln was assassinated, Andrew Johnson, who was his vice president, immediately, almost day one, began to pull back all of the rights that Congress and the Senate had voted to liberate the slaves all across this country. And by doing so, Andrew Johnson, and if you look in the records, because it's history, was the first president who came within one vote of being removed from office as a result of the dissatisfaction in both the Senate and the House, which ultimately at that time was Republican. Okay? Now, here's where you've got to put all of this into context, because the irony of it all, and with respect to Johnson's impeachment, let's move to New York. Why do we have Grant's tomb in New York City? Grant's tomb is the largest mausoleum dedicated to a president in this United States. And He's buried there, and his history will show that if it wasn't for Ulysses S. Grant reversing Andrew Johnson's executive orders, this country would have literally gone back to the days of the South. Now, we got to put a little piece of mother history to this. It was in 1871 when the NRA and the Ku Klux Klan started. That's right. And they got started principally as a buttress to the Ku Klux Klan and the White Citizens Council trying to make sure that African freed slaves could not get access to weapons. Now,
that's interesting. I didn't know the correlation about that at all, Byron.
Oh. And that's why history has to be understood, so that when Cory Booker and John Lewis and John Conyers, you remember reparations was John Conyers' legislation, House bill
that
was introduced for years, and this year it's coming back up again. And thank goodness for Cory Booker, who did rebuke the history of the gentleman's agreement not to attack one senator. No, you have got to get in the well, because what's going on in our country, all across the nation, and with respect to the hacking of Russia, and I got to tell you, I grew up in Washington, D.C., and I remember I've been knowing presidents from Eisenhower to now. Okay, I was born in 1950, and I can tell you without a doubt that what's going on in the halls of our Congress and the wells of every state is acts of high treason that has got to be pointed out and brought to the attention of the nation. And when I say acts of treason, what Russia did in my 67 years, and I'll give you kind of an anecdotal story. Both of my parents worked for the National Security Agency. And do you know, for the 67 years, and God bless my father and my mother's soul, I never knew what my parents did because of their security clearance. I do know this. My father worked at Intercontinental Ballistic Missile Systems at Fort Meade, and my mother got her PhD in Russian area studies and spoke 7 different languages. We never, ever in our household had discussions about what they did. But I do know this. For 67 years that I've been on this planet, Russia has been our number one enemy. And now all of a sudden, we got someone chumming up to Russia. It just rubs my rhubarb so bad. I'm like, how dare you try to bring us into what is literally our biggest adversary, not because of their terrorist actions like in Al-Qaeda and ISIL, because these are third world nations with terrorist activities. We're talking about the number two most powerful nation in this world. And guess what? Glasnost and the deconstruction of the United Soviet Socialist Republic was orchestrated by who? The CIA, national security agencies, and those 17 intelligence collecting agencies who helped to deconstruct the United Soviet Socialist Republic. And who was the head of KGB? Putin. It's very naive of us to think that Russia would not be upset with the United States secret intelligence agencies and spy versus spies, thinking that because we helped to deconstruct their country, that all of a sudden they're going to be our best friends. There is an enemy lying below the surface here that is extremely dangerous.
Byron, I was just wondering, not to cut you off, but you know, you look at the confluence of everything that's going on, the blatant conflict of interest with Donald Trump, his cozying up to Putin, the relationships that he's trying to foster prior to his election and now after. In your estimation, is largely advising Trump? You know, I was surprised to see Rudolph Giuliani's still in the mix, even though he's no longer being considered for a cabinet post now. Who in that circle do you think is largely advising?
Tillerson.
Rex Tillerson, and here's the reason why you can put a finger towards him. even the Koch brothers don't like
exactly.
Trump. Okay.
Right.
And you have to follow the yellow brick road, follow the money, and I guarantee, because one thing we do know in here in New York City about Donald Trump, he is not a fan or a favorite of the billionaire club. He is a paper
That's
billionaire
right.
whose
That's
brand
right.
name is more important than his real estate holdings, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And
That's
ultimately,
right.
he is a puppet of that which is being pulled by, yes, the energy oil industry. And if you look at his, if you look at Trump's appointees, look how many billionaires are sitting there, and how many of those billionaires have their main fortunes tied to energy resources. That's who's
exactly.
pulling his strings.
You know, if you
and
listen to Donald
treason.
Trump, if you, I've been saying that, Byron. I've been saying that exact thing. He should be charged
yes.
with treason. When he encouraged
yes.
Russia to continue to hack in, even on the campaign,
oh, yes.
when he encouraged
That's
them
right.
to hack into Hillary Clinton's emails, that was treason.
Right. Yes.
And also, if you listen
now,
to him, if you, any
mm-hmm.
basic cop will tell you, if any basic criminal, any basic criminal act that's committed, when you bring all the suspects in, you can't gather everybody up, and you're still trying to get the rest of the criminals, the accomplices, and you get that one suspect in, and he doesn't talk very much, but the one thing he does tell the cops is, well, I don't think it's them. I think it's somebody
yes.
else. They try to throw the cops off the trail. That's classic
exactly.
criminal behavior. Try to give
exactly.
disinformation. Here we come back to that, right? And it is obvious
Absolutely.
That that's what Donald Trump is doing. When you come out with something so ridiculous, when you say it could be other states, it could be this, it could be a fat guy
yeah.
sitting in his room. It's like, what are you? Are you insane,
yeah.
sir? Because the thing
yes.
that you're saying sounds like you're trying to cover up for the crime. Everybody knows that
it's
the brothers
deflection.
On the corner know that this guy is trying
Absolutely.
To throw people off the track. And he lies
yes.
over and over, and this goes back
Joseph
to
Goebbels.
Their deep-seated, Joseph Goebbels. This goes back to their deep-seated
yes.
hatred, so deep that they're willing to accept that, yeah, how he talks
well,
about their women. When
yes.
he talked about Meghan McConnell has blood coming from here, blood coming from
yes.
here, blood from wherever,
yes.
what? That's not enough for you? He talks about
and Eric,
you know, some of them old school. Go ahead.
And, Eric, one of the things you were hitting on, it must be understood, is that during World War II, and we as a country, and this is why history is important, you have to remember
mm-hmm.
the only reason we were drugged into the war conflict in Europe was because of Pearl Harbor. And
right,
at that
exactly.
time,
right.
prior to the attack on Pearl Harbor, Wall Street and our federal government were cozying up to the Third Reich and Hitler. In fact,
mm-hmm. yeah,
Donald
exactly.
Trump's father is a Nazi sympathizer. So where did he think he got his ideas from? And so it's
so
ultimately
with Prescott Bush, but we don't really want to talk
there
about
it
that,
is.
Right?
Well, it's a fact. This is why, and this is, and I think with respect to the charge of treason, in order to make it stick, and this is what I think the Democrats who absolutely know the intelligence gathering information that the 17 agencies have brought forward, finally starting to come out, is that to bring charges of treason, this crosses the aisle on both sides, Republican and Democrat, because you got some
mm-hmm.
Democrats who were not as enthusiastic about the Obama administration, who could literally be said that they were dragging their feet just as bad as
yep.
the obstructionists on the other side. And it all
yep.
goes back. It all goes back, and this is why history is important. You got to go back to the 1964 Democratic Convention in Atlantic City
mm-hmm.
when Fannie
in
Lou
the
Hamer came
when they wouldn't
to
exactly.
Mississippi delegation. That's exactly right, because at that point in time, you got to remember the 64 Civil Rights Act came out, then the 65 Voting Rights Act came out, and 1968, when they finally went back to Chicago, the Mississippi delegation was integrated. But in those 4 years, every Democrat who was then known as a Dixiecrat, as they were segregationists, staunch segregationists, all of them
exactly.
became Republicans. Every
That's
last
right.
one
That's-
of them.
That's when they started leaving the Republican Party, leaving the Democratic Party
yes.
and becoming Republicans.
That's right.
Republicans.
Exactly.
And you also talk about Also, too, I want to talk, when we talk, you mentioned the Republicans and Democrats, it's going to take them coming together to talk about it.
Yes.
And perhaps you were watching it today, but
I
was quite,
yes,
impressed with when we're watching the confirmation of Tillerson. I was extremely,
yes,
impressed with Marco Rubio.
Yes.
Marco,
mm-hmm,
Rubio, today, to me, I have a newfound, I never have respect for him, so I'm not going to say it's newfound respect. I have respect for him now because he stood up.
Yes.
He stood up like a true American,
yes,
to this man,
oh, yes,
and asked him, do you, no, I think he knew what else to do. He could have laid down and he could have went along with the status quo of what the Republicans are trying to do. But, well,
mm-hmm,
the thing is, he stood up. And
he,
that's what
up,
he should be commended for, because you know he's going to catch hell within the party in terms,
oh,
of his assignments. He's probably not going to get any support. He's probably not going to get reelected because of that. And if you watched it, as I'm sure you did, Byron, you watched how,
mm-hmm,
how Bob Coker really tried to,
yes,
coach Rex Tillerson along, because when Senator Menendez started,
oh, yeah,
questioning him, Coker interrupted and helped out Tillerson. So, you know, as they say in the street, the fix is in, right? The fix is,
oh,
in.
Oh, yeah, the fix is,
so,
in. It's a good old boys network.
Well, I still predicted, I for some reason, not to cut you off, I predict there's going to be a hiccup along the way. There's going to be, it's not the first time that we've seen people of wealth in positions of power. You know, we go back to the Nelson Rockefellers, even the Bushes to a lesser,
oh, yeah,
extent. You know,
yes,
but for some reason, those Republicans were, you know, moderately sympathetic to the causes of people in the civil rights movement. So, particularly Nelson Rockefeller saw no color.
Mm-hmm.
He was not.
Not really. But Nelson.
Right. And he and we know as well. So it's not like as if, you know, at least his stuff is documented. As you said earlier, Byron, there's a lot of paper and just bluster with Trump. But,
yeah, but Nelson Rockefeller. Let me just make a point real quick. Nelson Rockefeller was instrumental in supporting Margaret Sanger and the Planned Parenthood movement before, when it was a birth control movement, when they really had a,
right,
strong eugenics slant. And we, the eugenics,
right,
obviously, the birth control was really to kind of weed out the darker,
yeah,
population. And Nelson Rockefeller was one of the people who gave money to those studies for that. So, he was supportive in some of those other areas as well after the fact, Wayne. But you know what these people do is that they cover their butt. You know, they give money here to make,
yeah,
them look good, and then they give money to their real cause. And Byron, when you talk about also Trump is not respected amongst the real blue bloods, that's right. The Kochs and the people with the real money, they don't like this guy.
They
think,
like,
you know, they have that hierarchy within their little society. And so what he does is he blows up their plans, you know, because before they're doing it, they're looking like benevolent, oh, we're doing this. Here comes this guy, even at that dinner, even at the dinner,
yeah,
in New York, where,
yes,
he's, where him,
yes,
you know, where the bishop brings the two opponents together, and it's supposed to be good-hearted,
yes,
ripping, you know?
Yeah,
this guy had priests heckling him.
Yes. Well,
you got a priest doing really
bad.
You got priest heckling. They're telling them to tell a joke. Stop being so you know, vitriolic. You know,
yeah,
you almost heard.
Well,
curse them out.
I listened to your show from last week. I listened to a replay with Hazard, the boxing commissioner,
and
struck me very clearly about Trump and Atlantic City. And once again, let's go back to 1962, we had the Cuban Missile Incident. Why were we in Cuba in the first place? We were in Cuba before Guantanamo Bay, because everybody forgets that's on one end of Cuba and Cuba's on the other end. Okay.
Right.
So we're in Cuba principally so that the mob market, both the Jewish and the Italian mob industry, could create the Caribbean Las Vegas itself.
Right.
And it failed because Che Guevara and Castro said, oh, no way. Chase Batista all the way with the boat people to Miami. All right.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately what Atlantic City was supposed to be, because y'all may remember it. I kind of remember when the boardwalk was broken down. There was no gambling in Atlantic City. But all of a sudden, the state of New Jersey was laundering money, high end too, so that laundering its fact money and creating the casino industry in Atlantic City. Once again, trying to merge how this country was going to launder money that was created by way of the mob industry. Las Vegas is legal. The other only Ponzi place scheme in America where it's legal to launder money is Wall Street. And with Atlantic City being established as the Las Vegas of the East, who was principal in moving most of that? Donald Trump. And like Larry Hazard said, the money that was every major fight that came to Atlantic City, whose name was attached to most of it and who was making all of the money off of it? Donald Trump. And not paying people and buying up property
for pennies on the dollar. You remember that story? See, I first heard about Donald Trump during that time period because I was interested in Atlantic City because I had advised my father, who didn't want to listen to me as an 18-year-old, at the time, to buy stock in Atlantic City, because I knew just that. If they when it was in the Star Ledger and saying that they passed it to be legal, the gaming industry was passed in the assembly in New Jersey, I said, Dad, you might want to buy stock in Atlantic City because it's going to become the Vegas, Las Vegas of the East Coast. That's what they're saying. Of course, he didn't take me seriously. So years later, this is what happens.
Yeah,
I saw a story on an old woman who she had her house right in the middle of where Trump was trying to build. So he had bought up all the other property, started construction, and literally they were building the huge casino around her house. And she had to deal with the banging and this, and they interviewed her.
Right. I remember that.
And I thought it was like, well, why wouldn't you sell, lady? What could be better than having a millionaire offer to buy your property so he could build stuff, unless that millionaire, she didn't have any place to go, unless that millionaire also is offering people pennies on the dollar when he's not exercising eminent domain.
Exactly.
And that's what,
which they would have stolen.
That's when I first, my first awareness of Donald Trump, that's when I first said, this guy is a jerk. I'm not going to say the rest of the word that we say, but this guy is a jerk for taking advantage of this lady. I used to love it when Merv Griffin used to beat Donald Trump in every business deal that they would go up against.
Oh, yes, of course. But here's the piece that's missing from the puzzle, which is why everybody is trying to wonder why Christie is not on his transition team, and principally because the story that was in the New York Times that linked the mob industry with Christie and Trump together was so damaging that ultimately Christie would have been the white elephant on that team and could not possibly be passed muster when it comes to the hearings that we have right now. Christie's in trouble. Christie is in serious trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
No, that's why Trump doesn't have him, you know. I know he wants to bail him out doing something.
Oh, yeah.
But
he's
dead meat. You know, there's nothing that he can do. His credibility is shot, you know. And it really doesn't have a lot to do with Bridgegate. It's just his history, you know?
And listen to this, because this gets even more deep when you figure out why Trump settled his Trump University issue here in the state of New York. 2 weeks before Thanksgiving, I was at a banquet for the Louis Armstrong House Museum, and the Attorney General was being honored. Our Eric Schneiderman. And during that night, I asked, and this was the day after the election, we had this event. And I asked Eric Schneider in personal conversation, I said, Eric, it looks to me like you're going to have to bring the hammer down hard on protecting with the law and protecting the Constitution of the United States. And oh, by the way, can a president-elect take office if he's been convicted of fraud and rape? And he said to me, and I quote, you know, you kind of got that right, because ultimately it looks like to me they're trying to set Pence up as becoming the president of the United States. And you know what?
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
I'm always, 2 weeks after that conversation, Trump settled $25 million for the fraud case of Trump University. And ultimately, if you're going to establish impeachment, you cannot just come with hearsay and speculation. You've got to have him, Trump, being seen, convicted, whether he settled or not, that's a conviction, okay, admittance of guilt. And you're going to have to bring case after case after case so it becomes so crystal clear that treason has been committed, that the Congress has nothing, no choice but to impeach him and forcibly remove him from office.
And let Mike Pence do it, and then he could go on and make his other $2 billion, that $2 billion
exactly.
He claimed he passed on, that he just turned over to his sons probably and let them handle it, you know. I want to talk
exactly.
about also, you know, we were getting so heated in this conversation. We only have about another 14 minutes left. But
okay.
I want to talk about the aspect when he said that he was going to give his sons turn the company over to him. But, you know, everybody's been talking about it. That's not a blind trust. That's just a trust. It's not a blind trust.
That's just
yeah.
a trust.
Right.
Exactly. Exactly.
You
and
know?
And he said it himself in his news conference today. I could literally run
yeah.
the government and my company at the same time.
Exactly.
Oh, really?
And so cavalier with that.
Cavalier,
I mean, it's like,
yes.
You know, I couldn't believe when I heard that, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what I'm saying. I still think there's a subtle agenda here, and I think you're on point with the Pence thing.
Subtle.
I think that is the move, and it's just
yeah.
a matter of time. Because I
yeah,
think
I
at some that. Point, Donald Trump is going to be so frustrated, and he certainly is working the press against him. You know, he doesn't realize to a certain extent you can come out with all this nonsense about the fake news. You're going
yes.
to need the support of the American press to forward
Absolutely.
All of your personal agendas.
Absolutely.
You know?
And listen, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Wayne. I mean, go ahead, finish your point. I had something I wanted to say after you're done.
No. I mean, the fact of the matter is that, you know, he's doing things that have never been done before. And I always maintain that Washington has a particular playbook. It doesn't really matter who gets in there. There may be some changes. I think Barack Obama is like a walking modern-day saint. He, you know, he's done more, and I think as time goes on, as history looks back at his 8 years in office, you know, it's certainly going to be colorful compared to what some of the other two-term presidents recently that we've witnessed in our lifetime, and I speak of both Bush and Clinton, even Ronald Reagan for that matter. But the bottom line is that I think Trump is going to have a hiccup. I can't predict when, but I know it has something to do with his business and the whole issue of treason as well.
Absolutely. And what I was going to say is that, first off, you don't want to mess with those intelligence boys. He's at odds with them. You don't want to mess with them, even if you get an office, you fire and put all new ones in. You know, the whole thing about government, someone said, you know, the presidents come and go, representatives come and go, but the infrastructure, the cats who do the work, the cogs in the wheel
yes.
that make it turn, those guys
exactly.
are always going to be there. And
yeah.
so they got a system in place. You don't mess with the system. And what he's doing
exactly.
and what he did, you know, when he called out George Bush and talking about and talked to Jeb that way and said maybe your mom should come up here, you don't think Big George is calling his old CIA friend?
And trying to
don't think,
Eric, for 1 minute that whole Billy Bush thing was quite by accident. That was well orchestrated and planned, you know?
Nope.
And because he's part of the family, and he knew that tape was hanging around for the longest time, but, you know, Donald managed to escape that too. And I have
right.
to say, the Democrats, you know, they just did not have enough fire in their belly about Hillary becoming president. I mean, she won the popular vote, but this should have been a freaking landslide. I'm sorry. That's what it
well,
should
yeah,
have been.
It should have been. And also, too, you know, the Clintons, you know, they don't help themselves a lot. I mean, you got someone like Bill Clinton walking around doing the idiotic stuff that he does and seeming
oh, yeah,
like
exactly.
in the back of his mind or subconsciously he's jealous of his wife. You go visit
that's
the Attorney General on the same plane it does. Then you talk about Obamacare being crazy. What's wrong with you, man? What's wrong? You really don't want your wife to be president or what?
Yeah.
You know, that's what I couldn't understand. And as someone who's supporting, and as people who, you know, catch the most hell. You know, let's say America has told black people catch pneumonia, okay? That's what our unemployment rate is double that of the national average. So we really can't afford. We're the ones that, and other minorities are the least that can afford this type of stuff to go down. So when I see Hillary out there having this momentum and her husband keeps screwing her up, I want to say, yo, just stop talking. What's wrong with you? You want
and she knows that. I mean, the thing is, and the thing that really bothers me is that the fact that I guess she couldn't step away from him, and the only thing that she says about him is that he'll explain. He's become the president, the resident explainer, or whatever it is that they call him.
Yeah, well, Brosnan came to that, the explainer in chief, or the chief explainer,
yeah, explainer
or whatever.
In chief. Yeah, you know, but I mean, it was just ridiculous, and. It's sad. It was an opportunity, a moment missed. But I just hope that the millennial population of this country pays close attention to what is going on now, because this is the largest education they'll ever receive. You know, it's one thing to turn around and go and support Bernie Sanders with all the stuff that he was coming out with. Whether he could have delivered that or not is another story. But the fact of the matter is now, you know, we're in some serious hard times. We have the Supreme Court to worry about. We have all these programs that Obama and not just during the Obama administration, programs that have been in place for years that are being threatened now because of the people he's putting in.
What's
yeah,
really
he's putting
interesting,
in people that want to dismantle these programs.
Yeah, and what's really
exactly.
interesting, Eric and Wayne and Kay, is this. The reluctance of the Democratic Party in this particular election not to play the race card was their failure.
Oh,
failure.
Of course.
Exactly.
They had it. They were giving it to it on a platter. We didn't do anything to help put it there. It was divinely given to them, and they refused to do it. In every single debate, we kept waiting. When are they going to do the Central Park 5 issue? Because race was at the center of every economy,
everything.
The immigration, everything. And it still is. That's what's really
sure,
engaging
sure.
is because
but,
the discussion
but
Byron, of Byron, social,
the one
yes.
thing- I have to say, the dismantling of the black press, the fact that our
yep.
voices are not as strong as we once were, has a lot. I'm not saying that we haven't made progress. Yes, I see people on the tube who look like us, very effective, very salient. We had the Reverend Al Sharpton doing five
okay.
days a week at one point, you know?
That's
but
right.
But the fact
now,
of the matter is it became entertainment and showtime and not serious business about the agendas that face all of us today. And that's
and Wayne, you are so absolutely right, because I'll take you back to the 2008 election. It was 2 weeks before that election that KISS Radio ceased to be one of the other prime black stations in New York
mm-hmm.
City and became an ESPN sports radio
right.
program.
Right. Yeah.
The dismantling of the black press and black media so that the voice could not be heard.
Right. And as a participant in the competition against them, at least the issues were brought out on a regular basis.
Yes.
And some of us, some of us Negroes in the woodpile are to blame for the demise of what goes on. I
Hello.
Said that,
come
I
on.
Stand by that.
Please, come on,
of
please.
Course, we always are. I mean, we're always going to have those house Negroes, like the ones that were
yeah.
testifying. I don't want to say the ones that testified for Jeff Sessions today.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
I'm tempted to say
half
of them, because sometimes people they base that on their own interpersonal relationships, right? So there's a few black people that he's cool with. So they're going to come out and say it. But to suggest that you don't understand the overall plight that our people are going through, and really I'm thinking about this young guy who works for him that's on his staff that was kind of directing some of his comments over towards the other side in such a derogatory,
yes.
derogatory, disrespectful manner. it really kind of it got me a little bit angry, because the other guys, you know, they sat there straight ahead, talking straight ahead, but this kid had to kind of throw it over at the other guys, like, you need to get over and whatever. And I want to say, I'm not going to say what I want.
You know,
Eric,
you're absolutely right, because ultimately, you know, let's go back and look at the timeline of Trump's election victory. And from that time to this very moment, he has not had a single meeting, with exception for one, with the Congressional Black Caucus, who is our representation of our community.
Right, right.
So how are you going to not have – you're going to talk to Don King. You're going to talk to Omarosa. You're going to talk to you hear what I'm saying? Because ultimately, you're not talking to our community. You're talking to your hand-picked puppets. And
that's
you're,
right,
you're,
that's right.
You're lawn jockeys.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, that's why – okay? And where did they come from?
Right.
From Spooks R Us. Okay.
Yeah.
You're talking right. You must be reading my Facebook page. I've called Michael Spooks the biggest lawn jockey I've ever seen on several occasions.
Yes.
So
we got to call it like it is.
And then when Jim Brown and Ray Lewis, first of all, I didn't know Ray to be politically active, but then Jim Brown going to go up there. What's going on, Jim?
Eric, I wrote a blog on that saying, here you are, you're talking to two football players who probably are suffering from a concussion syndrome because they did stick their head into the pile.
Tell the truth.
That's right. Come on. And you know, and you're going to call them in to talk to them as experts in our community? Come on. And then you talk to Kanye West, who just had a mental breakdown?
He looked like he was still under some sort
Thank
of treatment,
you.
Didn't it? Kanye.
Yeah, he still is. Yeah. Used. That's what
I
they
feel
do.
Sorry for that, but here, you wanted to say something.
I have enjoyed this. I'm quite sure everybody listening has enjoyed it. And we want to tell people that our shows are archived. So, Byron, you're on forever.
Yes.
Because the show's on. Thank you. I love
this round table conversation with you all, because it really pinpoints, you know.
Yeah, Byron, good to hear your voice again,
and,
man. And
thank you, Wayne. Thank you, guys. What's really important is, five years ago, I started with Kay Thompson.
Okay.
That's a fact.
You did.
Okay.
Really did.
That's
they
right.
They were mistreating you. You know, so we got to do something about it. Byron was the most intelligent person at first, you know. So, but listen, thanks, Byron.
Yes.
Thanks, Wayne.
You're welcome.
Thanks,
we want to say thanks to Byron Saunders, formerly of the BCS Experience and other things. But we're going to have you on some more, because, you know, we always get down when we have these discussions like we did before. In those other days, so we're going to continue to pick that. We're going to pick that up again, rather, and continue to do it, because you always give us a good historical perspective. So thanks for being on, Byron. We will talk to you soon, my brother. And,
Amen.
And take care. Thank you very much.
God bless.
All right, Mr. Wayne Gilman. Thank you, sir. You want to give us some parting words, real quick? I disconnected Wayne. Oh, Byron, you're still on. I disconnected Wayne. Well, thank you, Byron. Thank you, Wayne.
I'm still
if you're wondering,
on,
Wayne, I'm
yes.
sorry. All right, thank you, Byron. Wayne Gilman, I'm sorry, Wayne. Wayne Gilman, the legendary newsman, who always gives us an interesting perspective. I'm very sorry, Wayne. I know once again, we want to encourage everybody to listen to the Kay Thompson Live Show on the blogtalkradio.com network. Go to blogtalkradio.com. /Kay Thompson Live. We're on every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. And as my mom said, the show is archived, so you can listen to us at any time. I am the son, also known as Eric Payne, and you are?
And I'm your mother, in case you've forgotten. Kay Thompson here, everyone. Everyone, Wednesdays, 8 to 9 p.m., and more exciting programming. And we are archived. Remember, we had Larry Hassett on, you know, about the fight last week, so you might want to hear that. So, good night, everyone.
Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Rick Ryan.